is the Lombardi Line with former NFL executive Michael Lombardi. Now here is your host, Stormy Bonatoni, on VSiN, the sports betting network.
Hello and welcome, everybody, to a Monday edition of the Lombardi Line. You are starting your week off right by joining us here today alongside former NFL executive Michael Lombardi out at his office in the East Coast. I'm Stormy Bonantoni, live from our VSiN studio in downtown Las Vegas at Circa Resort and Casino. And Michael, after last week, we got that little taste of the Hall of Fame and preseason. This week, we have it all, our first full slate, 10 games coming up this weekend. How excited are you to get it going?
I am really. We start Thursday night, you know, and then we go through Friday, Saturday, Sunday. And then, you know, also I think what we can learn a great deal as bettors is from these these practices, because they really offer a different perspective for the teams. Because instead of going against everybody and knowing the plays and knowing what to expect, the actual element of football comes into play. So it's a big week. I'm really excited, and I think – there's a little bit, I'm not saying the games are going to be great, but I do think there's some coaches, Sean McVay, Sean Payton, that understand that you're going to have to play some of your guys this year in order to get your team ready.
Yeah, we talked about that a little bit yesterday, specifically with Sean Payton saying that he's going to play a number of his starters this opening weekend, potentially even including his quarterback in Russell Wilson, who didn't play a single snap last year under Nathaniel Hackett. So a little different change in philosophy, a guy who got off to a slow start last year. I mean, it was a slow year in general, but a slow start in particular for the Broncos.
I think the start and finish, Stormy.
Yeah, exactly.
I think it was a start and finish. I don't think, he wasn't exactly secretariat coming out of the gate or finishing.
Yeah, I led myself into that one, didn't I? But 10 preseason games in total this weekend. We'll start with two on Thursday, opening up with the Texans and Patriots. We'll get that first look at second overall pick C.J. Stroud playing QB, a quadruple header on Saturday, two games every other day, and we'll close out the weekend right here in Vegas with my San Francisco 49ers taking on the hometown Raiders. Do you have any, like this time of year, do you have any just preseason memories that come back for you in your long time in the NFL?
Well, I think one thing I've learned is when you have a problem in preseason, it'll manifest itself in the regular season. If you're having a hard time in the red zone in the preseason, don't be surprised it happens in the regular season. If you're having a hard time protecting, don't be surprised. Sometimes, you know, we tend to dismiss the preseason as meaningless, when yet there's a lot you can learn from it. Even though the team is going to be slightly different, I think the one thing I learned a lot over my career is to not to just dismiss preseason as, oh, we're going to get it. Oh, we'll get that fixed. Don't worry. Oh, we got that. Don't worry. No, it matters.
Yeah, use as much of this opportunity as you can to work out some of the kinks. And to your point about practices, those joint practices are going to become really, really critical for a number of teams down the stretch here as well to try to figure out what some of those issues are. But I'm excited to get this weekend underway. I think it's going to be a lot of fun. Mm-hmm. We did get a little bit of news that's come down this morning. And I know this is a player who has been on your radar as somebody you're like, how has he not been signed at this point? But we've talked so much this offseason as well about the running back market that it's been difficult. But Kareem Hunt expected to visit the Saints tomorrow, according to ESPN's Jeremy Fowler. We know Alvin Kamara is going to miss the first three games of the season with a suspension dating back to the incident Pro Bowl week a year ago. But Eno Benjamin, one of the backups in that room, on IR with a ruptured Achilles as well. They do bring in already Jamal Williams and have Kendre Miller drafted out of TCU. Do you think that Kareem Hunt is somebody that could make sense in the Saints room?
Well, he does make sense because he's really good in pass protection and he's really good in route running. Last year, you know, he wasn't used as much as he typically was in the past. When you break it down, he had 35 receptions for 210 yards, just 6 yards a catch. But, you know, he's got that ability. I think he fell privy to the, you know, remember he wanted to be traded. He was looking for the new contract. They wouldn't trade him. He's only going to be 28 years old. And he didn't have a year. He did not play well last year. Averaged 3.8 a carry. You know, only had 123 carries the entire year. So this is a big year for him. I mean, and he fills the role that Kamara plays, which is really good in the passing game, can protect, run the ball on sub downs, and break tackles. So, yeah, I think it makes sense for them. But he's got to be in shape, and he's got to be committed to kind of turning this thing around.
Right. And we know the talent that he is and is capable of. Of course, former NFL rushing leader that rookie season in 2017, Kareem Hunt, along with Zeke Elliott, Leonard Fournette, and of course, the biggest free agent running back still available on the market, Dalvin Cook, waiting to find their homes. I thought that was an interesting report over the weekend, too, that he, of course, left Jets camp last week without a deal coming out. But now there's question marks about, well, how are the Jets going to use Breece Hall? And how am I, Dalvin, going to fit into this offense in that state? But I won't subject you to talking more running backs, Michael, if you don't want
to. Well, how is he going to fit into Miami's offense? I mean, they don't even call running plays. So, like, why would you sign there?
Well, I think maybe you would if you have Dalvin Cook, right? Versus Raheem Mostert as your number one guy.
I mean, you know, we had Omar Kelly on yesterday, and he even was laughing about the no run call. So, and behind that offensive line. Plus, you know, he's got $2 million to sit there and wait. I was told by somebody in the league yesterday, we were having a conversation about the preseason, and he felt like these running backs would not sign until a week before. Like maybe the last preseason game that week, but not play, but then get ready. Zeke Elliott, and he was referring to Zeke Elliott and
Fournette?
Not Fournette. Fournette's not in very good shape. He was referring to Zeke Elliott
Kareem Hunt
and Dalvin Cook.
Gotcha. Yeah, and I think that makes a lot of sense, not only from the like injury standpoint of what training camp is in general and seeing if there's an opening and an opportunity that makes the most sense for you and if you can get the most money out of the situation, but just like from a physicality and training camp, you can get caught up enough in a short time, I think, if you're one of those guys. But we're still waiting to see how any of those situations are going to play out. On the other end of the spectrum, there are a number of signings around the NFL that have come out since Friday as well, including over the weekend. The Panthers agreeing to a one-year deal with Justin Houston worth $7 million, looking to bring a veteran presence to that Panthers pass rush that certainly needed it, ranked 25th in sacks last year. He had 9.5 and 17 quarterback hits a year ago in Baltimore. A great compliment, I think, to play opposite Brian Burns defensively.
Yeah, and they need that, right? I mean, that's something that they've needed because Burns can get pressure, but they had no other defensive lineman on the team that had more than 5 sacks. I mean, Gross Matos had 2.5. Marcus Haynes had 5. I mean, the second leading sacker was Frankie Louvu, who had 7. So they need somebody on that other side. They tried to sign Carlos Dunlap last offseason. They couldn't get that done. They've been trying to fill this void for a while. They need to have this because it'll make Burns a better player. Look, they're good on defense, and if Houston can give them specific reps on certain downs against certain formations, that'll be a really big part of it because he can still, I thought he was an effective rusher last year.
Yeah, I mean, despite being now on year 13 in the league, he's been productive. 5 of his last 6 seasons, yep. 8 or more sacks each of those years. Stayed relatively healthy the last 2 years as well. 29 games played the 2 seasons he was in Baltimore. And has a little bit of familiarity with his head coach and Frank Reich. Yep. They had some crossover in Indy.
Right. And I think what you're seeing now, Stormy, is you're seeing that, okay, we thought this might be a problem. We have some young players we think could fill the void. Maybe they really can't. And so let's try to sign a rook. Let's try to sign a veteran. I think that's kind of what's going on right now in the league. And if we don't sign this guy now, even though we want to give it another week, this guy might not be available in a week. So we better do something now. We better be more proactive than ever. And I think that's why Houston signed. I think that's why Zach Cunningham. I think that's why Miles Jack signed as well.
Yeah, and generally speaking, just to wrap up that thought on the Panthers, like I like the mentality from the team. Understanding, yes, sure, we are in like a little bit of a reset, bringing in a young first-round quarterback in Bryce Young, but also showing that this is an NFC South division that is very much so up for grabs. We might be young and trying to figure it out, but there's an opportunity here for us to win this division and make the playoffs, and we're going to go all in different areas where we need to. And defensively, I think that's a good spot. You did mention Miles Jack and Zach Cunningham going to the Eagles on one-year deals, matching both worth $2.5 million. What do you think of it overall?
Well, I think, look, Philly wants Dean to be the starter, but can he be? I think, look, this is 2 teams in a row that have had Miles Jack and have walked away from who was once a really good player. Until that knee injury, you know, knee injury in college at UCLA that got him out of the first round. Then he had this knee injury down in Jacksonville. I thought I think it was 2016. He was one of the best players at linebacker. But, look, Nicholas Morrow, you know, where are they going there? I don't think this is a reflection of Dean. I think they need depth there. When you look at their team, Nolan Smith is listed as a linebacker, but he doesn't play linebacker. He's a defensive end. So Miles Jack and Cunningham give them some veteran experience. And when you bring a veteran in this time of camp, what you're saying is if he's good enough, we're going to carry him because we're going to owe him the entire season of salary. And we're just not looking for a camp body. We're looking to improve our roster.
And according to a lot of the reports that I've seen coming out of Eagles camp, linebacker might be the most glaring position overall where things sit right now. And N'Kobe Dean, to your point, he is dealing with a little bit of a day-to-day ankle injury. It's not anything serious, but just a nick.
You know, 2 years ago when the Eagles put no money in their linebackers, they had probably the worst linebacking group. I mean, Alex Singleton, they had a bunch of guys in there that were just not good enough for what they were trying to do defensively. And then they went out and they got – you know, they signed T.J. Edwards, and they were able to prove their linebacking core. And I think this year that may be back to where it was 2 years ago.
Yep, trying to shore up one of the weaknesses on that team. NFL Network insider Ian Rappaport also making a note that it's very similar to what Howie Roseman did last year at the defensive tackle position, bringing in Ndamukong Suh and Linval Joseph on the same day. Same position, same deal. So something that he has done 2 years in a row now. We are going to take our first time out of today's show, but when we come back, we're going to shift our attention from defense to offense and look specifically at how much some of these offenses are paid. Just because you're paid the most money overall, investing into your offense doesn't necessarily mean that they're going to be the most successful. Where it makes sense, where it doesn't, we'll evaluate it all when we come back.
This is the Lombardi Line with former NFL executive Michael Lombardi. Now here is your host, Stormy Bonatoni, on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
It's time to download Nevada's premier sports betting app, BetMGM Sports. BetMGM has all of your favorite wagering options, along with in-game betting, boosted odds specials, and more. You can download the BetMGM app today and stop by any MGM casino on the strip with your state-issued ID to open up an account and start placing sports bets from anywhere in Nevada. Whatever your sport, whatever your betting style, you're going to love BetMGM's state-of-the-art technology and fan-friendly specials every day of the week. Visit BetMGM for terms and conditions. Must be 21 or older and physically located in Nevada. Please gamble responsibly. Gambling problem, call 1-800-522-4700. We are off and running here on the Lombardi Line alongside Michael Lombardi. I'm Stormy Bonantoni. Time to dive into what we're calling salary cap superlatives. Today, diving into some of the most and least expensive offenses in the NFL. Michael, all of these numbers coming via over the cap. But are some of these teams in their offenses overpaid or underrated? I think this will be a fun comparison, especially considering the offense that is the most expensive going into 2023 is the Cleveland Browns, $151.7 million invested into that offense. And if offense wins championships, the Browns are spending it in the right place. But what do you think of the number? Obviously, we know a good chunk of that is for their quarterback, Deshaun Watson, but they've invested a lot up front in that offense.
Well, I mean, it's not only Deshaun Watson, right? I mean, they've got money spread on every single level of their offense, right? They paid offensive linemen. They've got, you know, they drafted Jerick Willis in the first round. Jake Conklin they signed. They re-signed Wyatt Teller to a huge contract. You know, Joel Pitano, they re-signed him to a huge contract. So every one of their offensive linemen, even Posick, the kid that they got from Seattle, who was a second-round pick, kind of had never really played well until he got with Billy O'Brien. And then Njoku, one of the top paid tight ends. Nick Chubb, one of the top paid running backs. I mean,
yeah, I was gonna say they paid Nick Chubb, and Amari Cooper's cap hit is actually higher than Deshaun Watson's this year, 23.8.
Yeah, well, they traded. Look, I mean, Stormy, they traded for Amari Cooper and didn't redo his contract. Yeah. Nobody wanted that deal except for the Browns. So look, this is who they want to be. And if they don't score more than 24 points a game with this amount of money put into it, it could be a huge, huge disappointment. I mean, because you always say, well, why aren't we being successful? Okay, well, it can't be because you're not paying players. It can't be because you're too young. It means that you've overpaid somebody. The worst thing to do in football is to be like, I mean, I've had this happen to us, is be a bad team and have no cap room. Mm-hmm. right? Last 2 years ago, the Giants were a horrible team with no cap room. Well, what you don't want to be is a high-priced offense with no ability to score points.
Right. That said, I know that you are high on the Browns, though, and what they could do this year with Deshaun Watson having his feet wet now, having this entire training camp starting from game one of the season. Their win total is set at 9.5, and you like them potentially to win that division even.
Yeah, I think, there's twofold, right? Either me and the Browns have misevaluated their offensive skill set, right? Or the market's right. I mean, there's no excuses for Cleveland. They have none. I mean, they even put money in the defense. They've got money on Myles Garrett. They signed Davlin Thompson. They signed Za'Darius Smith. They've got first-round picks in their secondary. They re-signed Denzel Ward. I mean, there's no excuses for Cleveland this year. Either they are or they're not.
Yeah, Myles Garrett, actually, the most significant cap hit to the team this year in Cleveland. Cleveland, $14 million ahead of the second-highest-paid offense, which is the Kansas City Chiefs, and they're coming off of a Super Bowl win, so you anticipate that has been paid certainly well. The Lions were the most expensive team a season ago. They sit third on the list this year in 2022, poured a ton of resources into their offense, gave the contract extension to Jared Goff. But it paid off, right? Because you see top five offense in the league last year in yardage and points per game.
Yeah, I mean, look, they're expensive because they paid Goff. They have a lot of first-round picks in their offensive line. That makes it expensive. Decker, right. Ragnow, and Sewell. So you've got that. Plus, you know, this year they bring in David Montgomery. They paid him. You know, they drafted Sam LaPorta in the second round. Mm-hmm. That cost you a little bit of money. I mean, they haven't even paid Amon-Ra St. Brown yet. They haven't paid him yet. They're going to have to pay him, right?
Correct.
They're going to have to pay him. So it's interesting how expensive this Lions offense is when their best receiver hasn't gotten paid yet.
And you mentioned that offensive line. They actually have the highest percentage of their cap invested in the O-line than any other team in football this year.
Which they have to, because Jared Goff needs protection. I mean, he needs to feel secure. And look, I'll never argue with putting your money into the offensive line. I mean, Atlanta's done the same thing. Now, they don't have money in quarterback, but they've done the same thing with their offensive line.
The one that stood out here, and so the final two in this top five of money spent on offense, the Raiders and the Broncos, and I think the Raiders are the big one that stands out here. All other teams that are on this top five have win totals of over 8.5, higher expectations for production, but the Raiders, their win total of 6.5, and they've spent a lot of money on their guys.
Well, you know, they got one of the best receivers in football. They signed Jacoby Myers. They paid Hunter Renfrow. I mean, their receiving room, they pass out Rolexes there. And they re-signed, you know, one of the few picks that worked out for John Gruden was Colton Miller, and they re-signed him to a huge contract. So, and their quarterback, even though he's not expensive, he still eats up a lot of the cap, and then they've got Josh Jacobs. So they've got star power. I mean, they should be able to, and they did move the ball last year. You know, they struggled at times, but they should be able to move the football. I mean, when you've got Devontae Adams, Jacoby Myers, Hunter Renfrow, a second-round pick in Michael Mayer, who they think is going to be really good, I mean, they got a chance to move the ball if Garoppolo plays to the level that he played last season.
And Josh Jacobs gets out there on the field. They certainly need that running back position.
I'm counting on that. Aren't you, Stormy?
I am,
I mean,
yeah.
He's not going to – I mean – I would be surprised if they didn't try to work something out here. I really would be.
For as much talent as they have on that offense, it is interesting that they don't have higher expectations. Three of these top five teams also all in the AFC West, which just goes to show trying to keep pace with Patrick Mahomes and that defending Super Bowl championship.
I find Denver being fast. I mean, Denver's the money in Denver and the Raiders are a little bit they have receiver money tied up. Obviously, Wilson's really expensive too. You know, and then they paid a lot of money in their offensive line. But I don't think of Denver as, oh, my gosh. Cortland Sutton's a good player. You know, I mean, I think Jerry Jeudy's a good player, but I'm not sure that that's going to create, oh, wow, that's not Devontae Adams good, right?
Right. Well, they have a lot of what's that, like we call it the on-paper talent. Like they should be this, they should be that, but we just haven't necessarily seen it yet. And so the Broncos are certainly hoping that investment will pay off and that this is going to be the year that that'll turn around under Sean Payton. Let's take a look at the five cheapest offenses in the NFL this year, Michael. The Patriots, the Rams, the Tampa Bay Buccaneers, Carolina Panthers, and Green Bay Packers. when you look at some of these offenses, are you thinking any of them maybe are getting a little bit of a bargain for what they could do this year?
Well, I mean, look, the one thing that jumps out when you look at this, what's the commonality? Other than the Rams, nobody's paying their quarterback, right?
Yep.
Even Bryce Young is not high priced. Jordan Love's not high priced in relative terms. So they're not paying their quarterback. And then, you know, the Rams, are the only guy they are paying, I think $59 million of the $100 million in the Rams on offense goes to two players, right? Goes to Cooper Kupp and it goes to Matthew Stafford. And then they have Haverstein in there that they paid. You know, I mean, that's really, to me, everybody else is a minimum contract at the Rams. The Bucs, once again, you know, the Bucs are good on defense. They put a lot of resources in their defense. And they broke up their offensive line that didn't play well last year. Donovan Smith, they sent him back, and he was a high-priced guy. Shaq Mason, they sent him back, and he was a high-priced guy. Leonard Fournette was a high-priced guy. They sent him back. So they've kind of trying to revamp this. And look, the Packers, they've always gone young, and now they're young at quarterback as well.
Mm-hmm. The one I think that could exceed expectations, and we've talked a lot about this Carolina Panthers team, but I do think that they have more weapons offensively than they're getting credit for because so many people doubt the size and ability of a guy like Bryce Young to play at the NFL level, especially his rookie season. But you have Miles Sanders, who you bring in at running back from the Eagles, Adam Thielen to be a veteran in that wide receiver room alongside DJ Chark and Terrence Marshall. I love Hayden Hurst at tight end. Up front, you think they should at least get better. I know Ikem Ekwonu wasn't exactly what they were hoping him to be up front a season ago, but he'll be great. I have a lot of confidence in this offense.
Yeah, and you left out Chenault, who I think might be their best receiver. I think he is really good to get when the ball's in his hands. He's got Deebo Samuel-like talent. He really does. And Tommy Tremble, the tight end from Notre Dame, if he ever emerges to be what he's capable of as a blocker to go along with Hurst, I agree with you, Stormy. This is a team that should be much better as they move forward with their offense. I mean, they should improve. They got veterans and they've got young players.
Yeah, they lost DJ Moore, obviously, to the Bears in that trade to take the number one overall pick. But I think it was like what they have in that room is more than enough for them to have success on that side of the ball. So if I'm having to pick one of these teams that's at a discount that you're going to get some solid offensive play from, I think that it might be the Carolina Panthers. We're going to take a quick break. When we return, we'll shift our attention from the NFL to college football. Thomas Gable, director of the Race and Sportsbook at the Borgata, is going to stop by as we will continue to go conference by conference today, honing in on the ACC and a little G5 talk as well. Don't go anywhere.
This is the Lombardi Line with former NFL executive Michael Lombardi. Now here is your host, Stormy Bonatoni, on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
My goodness, how good does it feel to have football back? And nobody knows football like VSiN. Now's the time to become a VSiN subscriber and get both our comprehensive college and NFL betting guides. Only VSiN subscribers get all the tools to prep for the college and pro football seasons. Our experts provide profiles of every single team with advanced stats and power ratings, plus best bets on season win totals, division finishes, and player awards. Sign up today for $199. You'll receive both guides and full VSiN access all the way through the Super Bowl. Or you can join us on a monthly basis, $19 for your first month. See everything VSiN has to up your betting game. VSiN.com/subscribe is where you can do it. Find all of the options to become part of the Sports Betting Network. Alongside Michael Lombardi, I'm Stormy Bonantoni, and we will get into some college football talk now, despite all of the conference realignment and what is now what I'm calling the four-pack, by the way, Michael. I'm glad that we're going to talk about at least one conference today that is slightly stable, because with Florida State, I guess, who knows, ACC and a little bit more as well, as we welcome in Thomas Gable, director of the Race and Sportsbook at the Borgata out there in Atlantic. Thomas, how are you today?
Doing well, guys. How are you?
Good. Glad to have you back with us as well. And like I said, at least one conference that we'll discuss is stable for now. So let's talk about the Atlantic Coast Conference this season. Last week, we saw Clemson picked in the preseason media poll to win it all. Florida State not too far behind, but Clemson with the majority of those first place votes. And I know they do have the edge in the betting odds to win the league as well. Do you see this as a two-horse race, or how do you view it?
Yeah, I think it really is. Clemson, a small favorite here, plus 140. Florida State, plus 170. And, of course, Clemson won the ACC last season. They're returning 15 starters. And I think because we were so used to seeing this team contend for a national title when Trevor Lawrence was there. And, you know, the last two seasons have sort of been looked at as down years. The expectations really rose when you have a sustained level of success like they did when they made six straight college football playoffs. You know, the expectations come with that. So I think there's a lot of excitement around Kate Klubnik and his potential, and he showed some of that last year. The defense is always top of mind for Clemson, and they'll be led by their linebackers, Barrett Carter and Jeremiah Trotter Jr., but they have a tough regular season schedule, and no one really wants to sleep on Florida State. These two teams will meet up pretty early on September 23rd at Clemson. Clemson will probably be around a field goal favorite for that game. The Seminoles, they're returning 17 starters, including quarterback Jordan Travis, who he'll be a Heisman candidate. He's an incredible dual threat. And this offense features a number of future NFL players, but it's the defense that's returning nine starters. And they already had the second best scoring defense in the conference last season at less than 20 points. So you have these top two programs, and you say, does anyone else really have a shot? And I think that the two teams that we have some liability on to win the ACC that people are kind of taking a look at just due to their odds is UNC and Louisville. Carolina sitting at 9-1, Louisville at 10-1, both with the same season win total there at 8. Drake May returns a quarterback for the Tar Heels after throwing for over 4,300 yards last season with 38 touchdowns. My concern on offense is whether May will have enough protection from this line. The defense is also a question mark, as this team seems to just rely on simply outscoring their opponents. You know, Louisville seems to be coming into this season with a decent amount of optimism. Defensively, they should be decent, but I'm not sure they'll be able to seriously contend despite the optimism. I really do think this is a two-horse race in the ACC.
You know, with May's a quarterback, TG, you know, you almost want to go down the North Carolina Tar Heel vacuum and buy into it. But then every year defensively, they have just not been able to play good defense. And even though they return eight starters, I'm with you. I don't agree. You know, if you have the best quarterback in the conference, and I think clearly Mays is the best quarterback in the conference, you should be able to have better than 10-1 odds to win the ACC. But this defense just doesn't stop anybody. And there's always a lull, you know, like they play Syracuse. Oh, you know, you think that's an easy win? No, they won't beat Syracuse. They'll stub their toe. I mean, this would happen to Sam Howe as well.
Yeah, no, I agree. And that's the defense is the problem there. And really, I think, is going to be the issue of holding them back. This team is going to be able to score. But that's their MO. They just put up a ton of points and hope that it's more than their opponent can put up. But the defense is going to be an issue continually.
Thomas Gable, director of the Race and Sportsbook at the Borgata, joining us live on the Lombardi line. And from a conference that has a little bit of stability to one that is in flux this season in 2023 is the American. And everybody talks about Cincinnati, UCF, and Houston going on to the Big 12, and not enough about the teams that are being brought into the American. So they added Charlotte, North Texas, Rice, UTSA, UAB, and FAU. The league's membership is now at 14 teams. UTSA, obviously a big addition, I think, to this league. Tulane is the favorite to repeat as the AAC champion, but UTSA, nothing to slough at. Those two teams alone combined for 23 wins in 2022.
You're right. I think UTSA is going to be right there. Tulane is the betting favorite here. SMU will be right there. UTSA will be right there. And Florida Atlantic's getting some action as well from bettors here in terms of the conference futures. So I think this division should be pretty competitive there at the top. Tulane is the rightful favorite. But as you say, UTSA is a program that I would keep my eye on. And they are getting some attention here, 4-1.
Yeah, no question. I mean, and how about SMU, Rhett Lashley's program? I mean, they lose their starting quarterback to the transfer portal, but their offense is so dynamic. Is anybody playing them at all?
You're getting a little bit on SMU, but really it's the bettors here have been gravitating more towards UTSA and obviously the favorite of Tulane.
And Tulane, of course, making a Cotton Bowl appearance a season ago, ended up beating the USC Trojans and Caleb Williams in that game. They do return their starting quarterback, Michael Pratt, but Tajay Spears onto the NFL now in 2022. Outside of the conference odds, any other win totals that people have been looking at in this league?
Not too much. When we get into these other leagues, into the kind of the lower conferences there, the win totals aren't really bet too much outside of some sharper bettors. And we can get into the MAC here as well, because this is one of the points I wanted to bring up. You know, Toledo, they're the favorites to repeat, plus 160. Ohio's there at plus 260. They obviously met in the conference championship game last season. But I want to bring up a team here in this conference, and that's Kent State. And I'm not bringing them up, not because they're a top team. In fact, it's just the opposite. This is a team that could be one of, if not the worst team, not in the conference, but all of college football. They have no returning starters on offense and a new head coach. And continuity plays a major role in college sports, and this team has none. So from a handicapping perspective, and I do this a lot in college basketball, if you can get a good read on the bad teams, that is almost more valuable from a handicapping perspective than dialing in the good teams, because everyone in the public at large only ever hears about the good teams. The bad teams are ignored by the media. And you really have to drill down and study these bad programs. And if you can get your numbers right on them, more often than not, you can find edges easier than just worrying about the Georgias and the Alabamas of the world. So if you focus in on these, quote unquote, really bad teams like Kent State, which is going to probably be one of the worst programs in the nation, and get your numbers really dialed in on them, that's where you can really look to exploit them kind of week to week.
You know, TG, we did this 3 years ago with Akron. We were making money for everybody on Akron and Rutgers. Remember those two that year? Now, you know, I agree with you on Kent State. And Sean Lewis, their former head coach, is now the offensive coordinator at Colorado. They could move the ball offensively last year. They ranked 75th in the country, but they scored over 30 points a game. The problem was their defense wasn't very good. They ranked 94th, and they lost all their players. So for me, I'm with you. I mean, the line to open up against USF at the end of this month on August 31st is 32.5. I think grab it now, because they don't go up to 35 before you know it. I don't see how Kent State – now, last year, remember, they played Georgia. They were competitive against Georgia, right? They were competitive against Missouri. They were competitive against Washington. They just couldn't finish. Remember the first half of the Oklahoma game? I think it was 10-3. They were in the game. They just couldn't finish it off.
But that's the thing. This is a completely different program, as you said. There is zero returning starters on offense.
Yep.
And to your point,
I'm with
32.5 was that opening number. It's now 34.5.
Yeah. None on offense and just four returning starters on defense. TG, awesome, awesome stuff as always. And you gave us a pro tip for hour two. You know we love you.
Gotta love it. Thanks, TG.
All right. Thank you, guys.
That's Thomas Gable, director of the Recent Sportsbook at the Borgata out there in Atlantic City. And I actually covered, I was a sideline reporter for the MAC championship last year when Toledo beat Ohio. Jason Candle, even with them winning the game, even with their quarterback Daquan Finn dealing with an injury throughout, couldn't even crack a smile in the postgame. Come on, man. You just won a conference title. What are we doing? We're going to take a quick break. More Lombardi Line as we roll on here on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
This is the Lombardi Line with former NFL executive Michael Lombardi. Now here is your host, Stormy Bonatoni, on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
Turn a loss into a win with BetMGM, the official sports betting partner of Major League Baseball. Place a same-game parlay wager with at least four legs on any MLB game. If all the legs of the parlay hit but one, you'll get your stake back in bonus bets up to $25. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to please play responsibly. BetMGM.com for terms and conditions. 21 and up only to wager. New and existing customer offer. All promotions are subject to qualification and eligibility requirements. Rewards issued as non-withdrawable bonus bets. Bonus bets expire 7 days from issuance. U.S. promotional offers not available in Kansas, Mississippi, D.C., Nevada, New York, or Ontario. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in select states. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. This offer not valid to Puerto Rico residents. Alongside Michael Lombardi, I'm Stormy Bonantoni, and we were kind of joking there with Thomas Gable at the end of that last segment, Michael, that, oh, we got a great pro tip for hour two. Let's just knock it out right now for anybody.
Yeah, why not?
Yeah, for anybody that missed the last segment, we were talking about college football, particularly college football futures, looking ahead to this season, and that there's some real value, Michael, when you stop paying attention to the Georgias and Alabama of the world, but look at some of these lower level group of five conferences, and particularly the bad teams in those conferences, because there's money to be made on some of those season win totals.
No question. Like, you know, you take the MAC when we're talking about Kent State. The year TG and I were talking about this was when Akron was so bad. And, you know, we have the number. You know, the worst teams in college football can be valuable than focus on the nation's best. The sports books generally struggle setting the number for bad teams at the lowest level of the sport. You know, we talk about setting the power rankings for the good teams. That's not easy. Defining how bad is not easy either. And that year, Rutgers was horrendous. And so was Akron. And we were giving out tips every week. Now, eventually the book got around to catching up to it. But I think when you stay in the MAC, or if you decide to, you know, you want to go and look at another level of competition, you know, where it's just not the Sun Belt, for example. You know, like, what's the worst team? Is Louisiana Monroe was bad last year. You know, Old Dominion's got improved. So, like, what is their power rating? How are they doing? And can the book get that right? Like, we just witnessed, right? The Kent State's 2.5 on the win over total. They're not getting – it'd be impossible for me to think they're going to get 3 wins. Impossible, right? Now, the book, the number at 34.5 against Gussie Malzahn's Central Florida team, I mean, look, if Gussie wears the sweater vest, they're going to kill him. You know that, right? So I don't know if 34.5 is enough to cover, because Central Florida is a good team.
Yeah, I think it's a great argument, and you see that specifically at our network. Like, I want to give some of our really smart bettors at VSiN some props for that, and you'll notice that when you go through the college football betting guide that there are some unders on teams that you normally wouldn't even be looking at or identifying if you're a more casual bettor, that there's some real opportunity there. Again, VSiN pro tips available at VSiN.com. You can search them by sport and by show, so if you're looking for tips specifically from the Lombardi line, that's how you can do it. Now, earlier in the program, Michael, we were talking about some of the most expensive and least expensive offenses and where, you know, some teams were maybe overpaying a little bit and if there was an offense at a bargain price considering the talent that they have. I want to do that similar exercise here as we continue salary cap superlatives, but on the defensive side of the ball. So let's look at those top five spending defenses. The Los Angeles Chargers, the most expensive at $127.8 million, but, you know, Khalil Mack, who had the big $141 million contract, $23.5 million average annual value right now, has taken up a significant chunk of that, along with the Bills, the Steelers, 49ers, and Giants. And the Giants are the one that really leaped off the page here for me, Michael, considering this is a team that a year ago, 25th in the league in defense overall, allowed 358.3 yards per game, run defense particularly bad. They cycled through linebackers, not for injuries, but just for production, like it was nobody's business.
Yeah, I mean, look, that they're paying Leonard Williams a huge salary. They paid Dexter Lawrence, who deserved it. He was really good. Leonard Williams wasn't good last year. They got Thibodeau, a first-round pick, on there. You know, they've got Adoree Jackson, who they paid. And so they put some money into this defense. Now, they've got to reap the benefits. Linebacker, they were terrible last season. Can they improve this year? I don't know. The one other team that strikes me, too, you can't get any worse than the Chargers, Stormy.
Yeah.
I mean, the Chargers were as bad as you could get defensively. And yet, when you see those numbers, you say, like, where is – look, they're paying Joey Bosa. They're paying Khalil Mack, right? They're paying Derwin James. Those three players eat up most of that money, right? They eat up most of the money. I mean, it isn't the Morgan Foxes of the world or the Michael Davises that are hurting them. It's those guys, and they've got to play to a high level. You know, they've got to play above it. I don't know if Khalil Mack can play at age over 30. Can Joey Bosa stay healthy? I mean, when you watch this team defensively, they could never stop the run. I mean, they couldn't stop the run to save their life. So how are they, you know, and you got to be sitting there saying, how are we, I know they made the playoffs, but how are we going to stop the run and we're paying all these guys this money?
Yeah, and this was a season ago. Overall defense, 22.6 points per game allowed for the Chargers, bottom 11 in the league. And when you're paying that kind of money, you need better production, especially given that you have the talent that you have on the offensive side of the ball. Give them a little bit of help, right? Like, give Justin Herbert help.
If you were Dean Spanos and you had the highest paid defense in all of football and your head coach was a defensive coach, wouldn't you be scratching your head?
You think.
Wouldn't you be saying, wait a minute, hold on here now. Let me understand this. We got a defensive head coach who's supposed to be a guru. I'm paying the defense the most money of any NFL team, and yet my defense is 21st in points allowed. You know, we were 32nd in yards per attempt rushing against us. I mean, like, what's wrong? You know, one thing we know, it's either players, coaches, or scheme. When you're playing the players, you're saying they're not the issue.
For this, and that's why Brandon Staley's on the chopping block, right? This year is going to be
he should have got chopped after, when he played Mike Williams in the Denver game. When he had no business playing him. You know, he plays him, and then he, not only does he do that, then he blows the lead in the next week, and he still keeps his job.
I'm still surprised. Like, if I'm Sean Payton, I would have wanted to hold out and wait for Brandon Staley to be let go so that I could be the head coach of the Chargers and have those toys to play with. But, you know, he chose Denver. We'll see how things play out this season with the Broncos. But also, I think that for the 49ers, clearly money well spent with the efficiency that they have played with. The Steelers, T.J. Watt, Cam Hayward, Minkah Fitzpatrick. Top 10 defense again last year in points allowed. Run defense was good. Let's flip the page to the cheapest defenses, though.
Let's be clear. Your 49ers are going to become the most expensive defense in the NFL. When that Nick Bosa contract gets put in here, that'll change everything.
But again, Michael, I will second
what
I just said.
They get their money's worth.
Yeah, money well spent.
It is well spent. Now, I'm not arguing that at all. You know, people would say, well, the Niners are only at 116. Well, that doesn't include – their 116 is a hell of a lot different than the Giants' 115.
Correct. Fred Warner, you look at what you have with Bosa, with Javon Hargrave you bring in. They are a defense that has staple players and names that even casual fans know. I love what they did. The Eagles, meanwhile, also had one of the best defenses in the NFL last year. This year, they are one of the top five cheapest defenses going into 2023, along with the Saints, Lions, Cardinals, and Rams. And some of those defense, the Eagles defense is not created equal to the Lions defense, to say the least.
No, but the Eagles have a couple guys. I mean, they got Fletcher Cox in it, but they're basically Georgia's defense. They paid a few guys, but they got a lot of young players on that defensive front. They got Sweat, who they're going to have to play. They've got, you know, Jordan Davis. They got Milton Williams. They've got, you know, they brought Burnett back. They've got a lot of young players that eventually will have to come through and see if they can. But they paid their quarterback, and they're getting their money's worth out of the defense. That's for sure. We'll see if they hold up. I mean, one of the concerns is, can Slay and Bradbury come back and have the same year? If that pass rush, which got 60 of the 70 sacks, doesn't demonstrate the same level.
Anybody else? Anything else when you look at those bottom five defense? I mean, in terms of prices, defenses that stands out to you one way or another?
I was surprised the Saints are so cheap, but I don't know. You know this, the Saints go through and change a lot. They get some young players in there. They've lost some really good players. You know, Hendrickson was on that team that went to Cincinnati. The Rams, look, the Rams have one player on defense. You can't name anybody else, right? I mean.
It's all for Aaron Donald, baby.
Yeah, they signed John Johnson back because they had to, and he was looking for work. The Cardinals, the same thing. I mean, once they lose J.J. Watt, they lost Zach Allen. I mean, where are they going? I mean, Buda Baker's their best player, and he's getting paid, and he wants more money.
Aaron Donald, 31.7 average annual value.
Think about that, Stormy. He's got 31.7. That means the rest of the cap is about 32. The rest of the players on defense eat up $32 million.
That's
and you
bonkers.
Wonder why you can't name them?
That's bonkers. Maybe the Lions, by the way. We mentioned the Lions as one of the highest spending offenses. And, hey, they produce. Give them credit. Maybe spend a little bit more on the defense, though. That's where they need the most help. This year should be improved, to your point. We'll see how things ultimately shake out. We're going to step aside. When we come back, we kick off hour two with today's edition of Step Into My Office. Michael Lombardi going to dole out some advice and maybe some words of wisdom, things people need to hear.